/evening news. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Full Omath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth. We'll get a preview of the Portland Book Festival, and later we'll speak with Professor Rayco Hillier on a new documentary that followed her college class taught jointly to undergraduates and incarcerated students at Columbia River Correctional Institution.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
The annual Portland Book Festival is our city's biggest literary event and one of the most popular on the entire West Coast. This year's festival takes place Saturday, November 8th, just a few days away, and features onstage discussions with over 100 authors and interviewers, writing workshops, pop-up readings, a very big and popular book fair, and, because it's Portland, a variety of local food trucks. The festival is centered around the Portland Art Museum and spreads across 10 stages at 6 partner venues. This year's author lineup includes Stacey Abrams, Rebecca Yarros, Karen Russell, Omar El Akkad, Megha Majumdar, Lydia Yuknovich, Lainey Zumas, Jess Walter, Renee Watson, Emma Donahue, Craig Thompson, John Raymond, Kimberly King Parsons, Jill Lepore, Cecily Wong, and former Portlander Susan Orlean, to name just a few. In what's become an annual tradition for me, we're fortunate to have Amanda Bullock, Senior Artistic Director at Literary Arts, here to preview the festival. Well, Amanda, this is your 11th Portland Book Festival. What's changed for you from your first festival to this one? Maybe a few lessons learned?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I'd like to think I kind of know what I'm doing now. It was all so new the first couple years, because the first year was the first year, and then we grew so much from year one to year two. And then, you know, within the last 5 years, it's been really different every year with going to virtual and back from COVID.
Oh, yeah. You had all virtual festival right after COVID, the pandemic hit.
Yeah. But the last couple years have been more sort of back to normal, you know, and this year I really feel really good about. I think we're coming in really strong and we've gotten a really good response to the lineup. So I think what's different is I just know more. Like, I know more what to expect. There'll always be something unexpected, but I feel more confident going in.
Oh, what an incredible lineup. I was going to ask about that. We've talked before about what goes into planning the festival, but that must be a very difficult task to select the lineup of authors among all the books that are published. Then you've got this incredible mix of the well-known, the up-and-coming.
Yeah, that's the goal. And it is difficult. There are so many great books out there. You know, people do also, when you're inviting folks, you do deal with rejection. Not everyone says yes, but a lot of amazing people said yes this year. And I do think it is maybe our strongest lineup. I'm really excited about everybody. And there's great heroes of literature and beyond, like Stacey Abrams, and we were just talking about Karen Russell and folks like that, and then debut novelists and up-and-coming writers and folks in our pop-ups. And I think that is always one of the very best things about a festival, is that you have that mix of people who are both familiar and unfamiliar to different kinds of readers.
Well, let's go into some of that all-star lineup. A good number of them local to Oregon and the Pacific Northwest. And we'll start with one of the names you mentioned, Karen Russell, 2025 National Book Award finalist.
Yay!
And along with Omar El-Akkad, both Portland residents and good friends of literary arts. And thanks, Amanda, to one of your wonderful pairings, which you do every year, they'll be appearing together.
They will be, yeah. They're going to be in conversation with Rachel Saslow. And even though Omar's book is nonfiction and Karen's is fiction, I just, you know, saw a lot of common themes in the work. And I really wanted to hear them talk to each other. And so I think other people will, too. And I'm really looking forward to that conversation. I think it'll be really interesting. And just so happens, like you said, that they're both Oregon writers and then had already paired them when they both became National Book Award finalists. So it's really, that's going to be a highlight of the day, I'm very sure.
And Karen's book is the novel The Antidote, which is based on a lot of nonfiction. It's got a real historical basis. Mm-hmm. And Omar's book is called One Day Everyone Will Have Always Been Against This.
Yeah, and both of their books deal with, you know, from very different perspectives, like reckoning with the false promises and potential of America in a lot of ways. And that's a really kind of big topic, and they come at it from different ways, but that's sort of the main thing that I think ties the work together. And I'm, like I said, I'm really looking forward to they're both also just like brilliant, amazing people. And so it's going to be a great conversation.
And not a Portland resident, but there's yet another 2025 National Book Award finalist, Megha Majumdar. And she'll be there with her a new novel, A Guardian and a Thief.
Yes, Megha is amazing. She is such a great writer. I'm really excited that she's coming. She'll be in conversation with the 2024 National Book Award nonfiction winner, Jason DeLeon. I think that's also going to be great. And then we have Patricia Smith in poetry, is also a National Book Award finalist, and she's at the festival as well. So we have a lot of National Book Award representation this year, which we're excited about.
It's just incredible. And speaking of incredible, you have two add-on special event tickets. So these are not included in the general admission festival pass. And these are very popular authors.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, one of them is completely sold out. So the Rebecca Yaros event, she's, of course, the author of the Fourth Wing series, and her newest book is Onyx Storm. She's being interviewed by Lainey Taylor, and that is very much sold out. We had an incredible response to that event. However, we are giving away a pair of tickets to that event at Reader's Night, which is on Friday, November 7th. So,
oh, yeah, we'll talk about that.
Yeah, what an opportunity. Get a chance to get into the Rebecca Yaros event. We are giving away a pair of tickets at Reader's Night. So you will have everyone at Reader's Night will be entered in a drawing to have a chance to win. And then we do still have tickets left as of right now to Stacey Abrams, which is going to be great. She is, you know, known for her political work, but she's also a very talented and pretty prolific writer. She writes romance novels, and then we have her for her thriller series. The newest book is Coded Justice, and she's being interviewed by Dave Miller at the Schnitzer. So that's at noon. You can get in. It's just $5 to get an extra ticket for that. And then we also have some book as ticket available if you want to make sure you're in the front of the hall.
And, of course, we mentioned mixing the well-known and the award finalists and winners with the up-and-comers, lesser-known authors, which is always a big part of the festival for me, a chance to discover someone new. Mm-hmm. Any suggestions for writers who might not be on the average reader's radar?
Yes, definitely. There's a lot. Like I said, all killer, no filler, like hopefully every year, but I think really this year, one of my favorite debuts this year was To the Moon and Back by Eliana Ramage, which is about a woman who wants to be the first Cherokee astronaut. And it's funny, it's great. There's drama and intrigue. And at one point, it's like a queer campus novel. And it's just, I loved it so much. And she's in conversation with Anna North, whose last book was Outlawed, and her new book is The Bog Queen. I think that's going to be a really great conversation. And someone else I want to mention is Suvankam Thamavongsa, who's really well known in Canada. She won the Giller Prize for her story collection, How to Pronounce Knife. Her novel is Pick a Color and is really great. And she, I think, is such a wonderful writer. She was one of my very early invites to the festival because I'm just such a big fan of hers. And she'll be in conversation with Portland's own Grace Bancoli and moderated by Cecily Wong. So I think that's also going to be a really strong panel discussion, and I'm excited to hear about those two authors in conversation with each other.
And there's another group of not necessarily lesser known writers, but who don't have their own sessions, but they'll be at pop-up events at the Portland Art Museum, which you do every year, an author doing a reading in front of an appropriate work of art. Yeah. How do you select people for that and then pair them with artwork at the museum?
Yeah, my colleague Jenna Nishimura curates the pop-up programming, and she's done a really wonderful job this year. The pop-ups are a great way for us to feature some more of the great. It tends to be mostly regionally local authors. We have some folks who are coming from Washington and a little farther afield than the metro area. But we get so many great books, and there's so many great books out there. It's a way for us to include more folks in the festival who we maybe couldn't figure out a good pairing for, or otherwise just kind of couldn't figure out for the kind of main stage pairing lineup. And the pop-ups are one of my very favorite things about the festival. And I think something that really makes Portland Book Festival unique and stand out, because we're able to highlight the art museum and the amazing work there. And I think it's really, I know because they tell me actually, it's really fun for the authors to read in the museum. Jenna makes the pairings, doing her best to thematically connect the visual art with the written work. And so it's also really exciting to see that come together. And the museum, you know, is on the verge of opening this new pavilion.
Yes.
And so this is a great time to go check it out. And we're really excited about what's to come from the Portland Art Museum. Everybody's festival pass includes admission to the art museum for the day. So it's also really nice to be able to take a break from the literary things and go look at some art. And then because we have the pop-ups, as you're looking at the art, you might stumble on a literary thing. Someone might just start reading poetry while you're in the museum.
More intimate. You're kind of up close with the author. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just a kind of a group gathered around. It's really almost lovely. Like a campfire or something.
Yeah. But here it's a work of art. It's great. So that's another thing I really like, recommend taking some time in the day to, even if you're not familiar with the people who are doing the pop-ups, just they're all on the second floor. They're all pretty close to each other. Just go over to the museum and check it out. And I would bet that you will encounter something that is meaningful and that is moving for you. So definitely don't miss the pop-ups.
And you always do a great job of including something for everyone at the book festival.
That's the goal.
So covering pretty much all age groups and types of books. And the lineup includes someone I'll be interviewing for my Jonesy show, Brandon Wong, a local writer of middle grade books. Can you talk about, not necessarily Brandon, but the events for kids and young adults, which is a big part of fiction now?
Yes, it's true. Yeah, we have a great YA lineup, and we actually don't have a single YA stage this year. The YA events are spread out so that you could attend all of them time-wise, but they're at a couple different stages. And we're really excited about that. We also have, like, sort of in the YA zone, we host the launch of the anthology of high school student writing that comes out of the Literary Arts Youth Programs. And that will be at the festival at 2 p.m. So you can catch true young adult literature from young adults themselves at the festival. And then our middle grade and picture book programming is at the Judy, which is the home of the Northwest Children's Theater and is such an amazing space. This is our third year, I believe, at the Judy, and we are so grateful to be partnering with them. It's the perfect place for the kids' programming. So we have picture book story times throughout the day from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. We also have some picture book panels. So if you're someone who's interested in writing picture books yourself, you can hear from these creators about that process. And then we have a bunch of great middle grade programming with folks in conversation, and that's, you know, local authors and national authors, and both picture book and middle grade illustrators will be participating in the very popular illustrator draw-offs, which is a very friendly drawing competition, which is really fun. So I also think the Judy is a great place to stop by, whether you have kids in tow or just a kid at heart. It's a really joyful place to spend some time on festival day.
Now, we mentioned the book fair, always popular, includes a variety of booksellers and publishers. People can buy books there, meet authors, get their book signed. I know a few people here at Indie Presses in Portland. They tell me it's a joy to meet the readers, and they sell a lot of books.
Yes, that's one of our goals. Full price admission includes a $5 voucher, so attendees get $5 that they can spend at the book fair or any of the bookstores. And we started that to really help incentivize book buying. It's really important to us, and it's really important to pretty much everyone that participates in the festival. And it's always more fun when you have, I guess, a souvenir from something. And we encourage you to have as many book souvenirs as you can carry. And I think the exhibitor fair and book fair at the Art Museum is a really great place to get a good picture of the regional publishing landscape. There's some people doing some really, really cool stuff. It's not all publishers. There are kind of book-related goods and nonprofits and different folks in the mix, too. So there's a nice
grad
variety.
School programs, too, I think.
Yes, yes. And so it's also a really great place. I'm like, every place is a great place to spend some time. But I think part of what we're highlighting is that the festival isn't just people talking on stage. There's a lot of other things happening that makes it a festival, I think, and different ways for you to have a full and varied day when you're out at the Portland Book Festival.
Well, Amanda, many thanks for joining us at KBOO, as you usually do, to preview the festival. And
thank you. Thanks for having me.
Big thank you to you and Literary Arts for bringing us this great annual celebration of books, writers, and readers.
Thank you. And thank you for all that you do, Ken, and all that you do for writers and readers as well. It's so much appreciated.
Oh, thank you.
We've been talking with Amanda Bullock, director of the Portland Book Festival, which takes place this Saturday, November 8th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. You can find out more online and purchase tickets in advance at pdxbookfest.org. This is Ken Jones for KBOO's News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Lewis and Clark Professor Reiko Hillier teaches a course on the history of crime and punishment in the United States inside a Portland, Oregon prison. The class brings together 15 undergraduate students from Lewis and Clark College with 15 incarcerated students to learn together as peers. A film documents this class taught inside Columbia Correctional Institution and will air on PBS on November 25th. With me is Professor Reiko Hillier to discuss the film Classroom 4. Professor Hillier, you've been teaching this course, The History of Crime and Punishment in the United States, since 2012, where your students experience going inside a prison to learn together with the adults in custody.
Yes, thank you. Well, I do need to name the institution that founded this method of teaching. The vision was hatched at the Inside Out Prison Exchange program, which began at Temple University about 25 years ago. And I was trained with this method, allowing me the equipment and wherewithal and pedagogical skill to construct a course that brings together inside and outside students. Every week, we go inside the prison, 15 Lewis and Clark undergraduates, and for 3 hours, sit with 15 incarcerated students, whom we call inside students, and we meet to discuss the history of prisons in the United States, as well as the lived experience of those who've been touched by that system. And we meet for 15 weeks, and we blend together history, scholarship, and academic learning, and take the longer view, looking at both the work of academics as well as some primary sources, and weaving that background together with the wisdom of the inside students. We come to this encounter and produce a dialogue that really deepens our understanding of each other and of the systems that we're all a part of.
What preconceived thoughts or beliefs do the students have about prison or about adults in prison prior to entering the prison?
That's a good question. I will say that the Lewis and Clark students tend to be very open-minded if they're signing up for such a class. And some of them are interested in the class because of the experiential learning that it provides, the fact that it sort of gets them out of their comfort zone, as they say. So some of them have no experience or knowledge whatsoever and are just kind of open-minded to whatever comes. There are some Lewis and Clark students who have had family members or loved ones who have been incarcerated. And there are others who know a lot about the system through academic learning or their political leanings. Most of them are curious and probably more open-minded than one might expect. To be honest, the inside students are the ones maybe who have more fixed preconceived notions about college students in the sense that they've expressed to me and eventually to each other that they're intimidated. Many of them inside students have had pretty challenging or even dehumanizing experiences in educational institutions, and they're worried about being judged, being inferior, not being able to keep up with the conversation. So there's a lot of courage and vulnerability that inside students are engaging in order to even enter that classroom.
So when the students enter the prison, are they paired up with an inside student? And how are the discussions initiated? And what is discussed during this time?
Well, a lot of trust has to be built from the very beginning. So there are a lot of exercises and structures, activities that allow the students to get to know each other and break the ice that may have very little to do with the official content of the class. So one of the moments that you'll see in the film is the very first day where we construct something called the wagon wheel, where students are paired with each other in the sense that they're sitting in concentric circles, and they get paired up with a student for about a minute or two to answer a prompt or a conversation starter. And right away, they're talking about their favorite animals, their favorite books, their favorite childhood memory, and they get a chance to speak with each person in the class as our opening activity. So right away, we break the ice, we make human connections, and then a lot of the class throughout the semester is constructed in small groups. We always get in a big circle at the beginning of class, at the end of class. We're always trying to provide time to process what's happening in the class. So it's never just about the historical content, but about our experiences learning together and from each other.
And share a conversation, if you can, from the film about what goes on. How deep or how meaningful are these discussions?
Wow. Well, there are so many. I would say that about halfway through the semester, once the trust has been built, conversations can get really deep and really personal. And then, as I've said, we're always trying to blend together an understanding of the bigger social structures as well as individual lives. So about halfway through the semester, you'll see that we're discussing Bryan Stevenson's book, Just Mercy. And that is a book about the lawyer, Bryan Stevenson, who defends the despised, the young, the poor, the wrongly convicted. And he talks a lot about the kinds of obstacles and constraints that confront these folks who end up finding themselves ensnared in the criminal justice system. And some of these folks are children, you know, convicted 12, 13, sometimes sent to adult prisons for very long sentences. And we're looking at that book and trying to understand systemically why that happens and also how it affects the lives of the people in the book. But these same structures also have affected the lives of people in that room. And so there's a moment in the film where we're talking about children that are convicted and the idea that those folks are generally not offered a second chance. They're sort of frozen in time, judged by the worst thing that they've ever done, and really not conceived as human beings who can grow and change and transform. And a lot of the folks who are inside students especially have had also childhood experiences and maybe were convicted or sent into the system, the carceral system, at a very young age. And a lot of them feel like they've been fixed at the moment of you know, their worst moment. And so there's an exercise that we do in the class where I developed a writing prompt where I asked them, you know, how have you changed since you were 14? What would people miss if they froze you at 14? And everybody responds, and people who are willing to share, share. And it's an incredibly powerful moment in the film. And I think it goes to a kind of universal feeling that none of us wants to be frozen at the worst moment of our lives, no matter what the degree of transgression. We all want to grow and transform and be good.
And speaking of transforming, how does this experience change your students?
Well, I think that for the outside students, as I think I've said before, it offers really an incredibly deep and personal and human encounter with a system that sometimes seems very abstract or removed or overwhelming or just hard to parse. I think that by developing human connection with people whom we've taught to perceive as dangerous, as demons, people who have been pulled out of our lives and rendered invisible, that developing human connections with such folks reminds us that, you know, on a very personal level, that we can undo some of the prejudices and habits of mind and ideological constructs that we've all been trained in. That even those students who are maybe, you know, prone to be critical of the criminal justice system may not have actually encountered its real human effects. And to be able to have that connection with folks, I think, breaks down a lot of the assumptions that we talked about earlier and does inspire, I think, social change. A lot of our inside students go off to do wonderful things. Sometimes it's law school, sometimes it's art, but they carry with them the sense of suffering and injustice of the people that, you know, around the people that they've met, and a sense of obligation to them as individuals and in the future more generally. And for our inside students, I think they develop a lot of confidence. They develop a sense of socialization, that they can be perceived as something beyond the label of inmate, that they can be seen as students, that they can be listened to, that their stories matter, that their wisdom is useful. I think that this is tremendously affirming for the folks inside. And another thing that might not be expected is that a lot of the folks inside who want very much to make amends and to reckon with their transgressions are folks who do see their lives as a series of individual choices and sometimes attribute their circumstances to quote unquote bad choices, which may be true to some degree. But when they, the inside students, also learn about the history and the structure and the politics around the system that they're in, they begin to develop a critical faculty that allows them to place themselves into a larger historical context, and it helps to understand their own lives more deeply.
So the film that documents this course, Classroom 4, is holding screenings nationwide, and it will air on PBS's POV on November 25th. But first, there will be a free pre-broadcast screening at Portland's Clinton Theater on November 9th, where you will hold a Q&A. So talk about this event on November 9th.
Yes, thank you. We've been so thrilled that Classroom 4 has really been a tremendous success at film festivals around the country, but we wanted very much to be able to screen it for a local audience, for our community. You know, a lot of folks don't even know that there is a prison in North Portland. And even though they may be vaguely aware of some of these issues, it really does bring it home to us to screen this movie in our community, in our neighborhood. So it's a free screening that we're offering at the Clinton Street Theater in Southeast Portland, which is a lovely local venue. And what's tremendously exciting about this is that it's going to be a kind of reunion, because there are Inside students who were featured in the film. One is named Nick and one is named James, who have now been released from prison and are going to be there to participate in the Q&A and talk about their experience in the class and, of course, their experience participating in the film. I will also be there, and other former outside students will be there. So we're really excited to be able to share the film, because the whole point of making the film was to sort of translate the magic that happens in that classroom and communicate it in a way that it could reach people who don't have the chance to be in that classroom. And so now we have folks from that classroom also to be able to speak about the experience. It's going to break down the walls even more.
So that's November 9th at Portland's Clinton Street Theater. And you can check out Classroom 4 at classroom4film.com. Professor Rayko Hillier, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For KBOO News, I'm Karen James.
I love you, KBOO.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Our goal is to create an atmosphere devoid of genre, a place where quality is key. It's important for the world and future generations to understand the power of art and